So it's great to be back after a long time. And what I want to do is talk a little bit about this paper. And because the paper is out and time is limited, I will try to mostly present the qualitative picture and avoid 95% of the calculation. And well, maybe before I even start, I should explain what the sort of general philosophy here is, what one is trying to do. I don't think we have a very good understanding of what happens in string theory in general when we break supersymmetry, and in particular, what kind of sort of new dynamical phenomena can occur. All sorts of phase transitions, instabilities, metastable states. And so we need to do more examples, I think, in order to understand how these things work. And one very simple thing to do is to start with the supersymmetric background for closed strings and to introduce supersymmetry breaking by just adding to the supersymmetric background the collection of D-brains that breaks all supersymmetry. And then, of course, there is a series of questions that one needs to ask, like, does the resulting background have either perturbative or non-perturbative instabilities? If so, where do they take the system, et cetera? And a lot of backgrounds of this sort have been looked at in the past. I mentioned here a few of them. Things like non-BPS D-brains and brain anti-brain systems in flat space-time. Sen did a lot on D-brains that propagate in the vicinity of NS5 brains that are, I think, understood to some extent. There's been a lot of talk of brains and anti-brains wrapping cycles of Calabi-Yau manifolds. And also something that I myself was involved in recently, which is D-brains models of QCD, theories that have confinement and chiral symmetry breaking. And in all of these examples, what one typically tries to do is first understand the classical string theory without supersymmetry, and then maybe go beyond that. So what I'm going to do in this talk is discuss a system of this type. And you can introduce it in different ways. Actually, the way we arrived at it was not this one. But one way of introducing the system is to start by looking at a certain supersymmetric gauge theory in 3 plus 1 dimensions, which I will mention what gauge theory it is later in the talk, and to embed this gauge theory in string theory as a theory on brains. Now, if you forget about string theory, if you just look at the gauge theory in question, what you find is the following. Classically, supersymmetry and gauge symmetry are broken, and the quantum theory does have both of those symmetries. So that in particular means that the classical ground state, which as I said here is non-supersymmetric, is actually not the ground state. It's unstable but long-lived in some particular region in parameter space. And what we're going to do with this is to realize this gauge theory as a low-energy theory on D-brains and string theory. In particular, we will have some system, which I will specify in a moment, of intersecting Nevesh-Wurtz and D-brains. And this will lead us to a system which has all sorts of parameters, and in some limit in parameter space, it basically just reduces to this gauge theory that I mentioned before, so there's sort of nothing new to learn. But in some other regions in the parameter space, we will find that the system can just be analyzed using classical string theory. And when you do that, you recover some generalization of the kind of phenomena that you see in the field theory. And of course, as usual, when you can sort of feed back the information that the gauge theory gives you to learn interesting things about what the brains are doing. So let me start by just explaining what brains we are planning to use here. So as I said, we're going to have two kinds of brains, Nevesh-Wurtz, 5 brains, and D-brains. And we're interested in 3 plus 1 dimensional dynamics. So we will have 3+1 dimensions that will be common to all the brains. And just for brevity, I will denote the two kinds of the Schwarz 5 brains that will appear in this game by NS and NS prime. So they're going to be extended, the NS brains in the directions 4 and 5, and the NS prime brains in the directions 8 and 9. And actually, in all the pictures that I'll draw soon, I will just ignore these dimensions throughout the discussion. These brains are going to be arranged in the following way. So here I actually focused on two of the dimensions out of the transverse space that are going to be important for me. So I will call X5, which is the directions along the NS brains, by X. I will denote it by X, they say here. And X6, which is a direction transverse to all the brains, I will denote by Y. And so the configuration that we'll start with, the configuration before we ever break supersymmetry, is going to be some number of these NS brains stretched in the direction X, which is X5 in this plane, and NS prime brains that are at some points in this plane. So the physics that we will eventually study will depend on these parameters, the positions of the NS prime brains and this parameter K, etc. Now, this configuration is supersymmetric. You can check that it preserves 8 supercharges. And in fact, you can think about it as another description of a singular or almost singular non-compact Calabi-Yau manifold. This is familiar for a piece of this picture. So if you take just one of these intersections, so if you take K to be 1, and you just have one of these NS prime brains, and you throw the other one away, then this system is known to be a dual description of a conifold singularity on a non-compact Calabi-Yau. So what we have here is two of these conifold singularities. And moreover, the fact that the NS and NS prime brains are not coincident means that there's some resolution parameters that are turned on. So if one wants to have some kind of picture of this as some singular Calabi-Yau geometry, then we have resolution parameters and the separation between the two conifolds that we're studying the dynamics as a function of. Now, as I mentioned before, this is a supersymmetric brain configuration, and what we would like to do is add D brains to it in such a way that we break supersymmetry. So what we're going to do is add D4 brains, and this is actually something that 10 years ago or so was realized to be useful in the so-called Hanani-Witten construction. So here we have a certain number of D4 brains pointing in one direction and some other number of D4 brains pointing the other direction that connect the different NS prime brains with the NS brains. And of course, because these are, if you wish, brains and these are anti-brains or vice versa, this configuration preserves no supersymmetry. So, no, actually it's not, because I assume that by Waffen company you mean like surfaces like y squared equals to x minus a1 times x minus a2 plus uv or something like that.
Like
this.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. So Waffa, well, this is the same as this, yeah. And so here you can wrap a certain number of, say, D5 brains around some small two-sphere and anti-D brains over here. And these two setups are importantly very different, because here, if these D brains can overcome the potential barrier, they annihilate. Whereas we're going to discuss what these guys want to do, but they surely cannot just disappear, because they carry different charges under the gauge fields on these NS prime brains. So there's going to be interesting dynamics. So in this sense, it's less trivial what it's going to do, because here it's clear that the true ground state of the system is the state with no brains.
But on the other least his argument in favor, but contra argument is that the theory didn't have a nice kill theory limit, or at least there was some mystery about that. Whereas
this, in your case, yeah. Well, I, from that point of view, I think these things are comparable. I mean, we can discuss this. I mean, all these situations, the way I would say it is that both this example and this example have the property that if you're willing to change all the parameters of the string theory, namely this distance, the sizes of the cycles, the G-string, then there is a region in which the dynamics just reduces to a certain gauge theory. And if you look at other limits in parameter spaces, we will do here and they did there, the dynamics is obviously not field theoretic. That's just a general fact about string theory, that in general the physics is not field theoretic, of course. And but here also, as I'll mention at some point, there is a limit in which the dynamics does become field theoretic. In fact, there are all sorts of limits like that. I mean, I don't think I will have time to do it in detail. But so it's actually important to realize that unlike that case, here the vacuum cannot possibly be the state with no brains. Okay. So as I said, this is a generalization of the Hanani-Witten construction, and in fact, it's something that is sort of very nice in field theory. If you remove one of those blocks here, if you just, say, have these guys, then, as I think you were alluding to before, this is just a construction of, well, first of all, it preserves an n equal 1 supersymmetry, and it's just a, it reduces at low energy to SUN1 n equal 1 super Mills theory, which is something we understand pretty well. And similarly, this reduces to SUN2, n equal 1 super Mills theory. So that altogether, or SU or U, altogether we have UN1 cross at UN2 gauge theory with fermions that fill out n equal 1 multiplets. But of course, this setup is not supersymmetric. As I said, this breaks supersymmetry. And so you ask, well, why not? Why isn't it supersymmetric? From the gauge theory point of view, one way of thinking about it is that the fundamental string that is stretched between these guys does not fit into supermultiplets. So we have a bifundamental scalar field, which is the tachyon. Of course, it's not tachyonic. It's very massive if the distance between these two things is very large. And nevertheless, it does not fit into multiplets. So very naively, you would say that what we have here is sort of the opposite of the usual paradigm of supersymmetry breaking. We have a theory which is supersymmetric at low energies. If you go to high energies, you see breaking of the supersymmetry because of this tachyon. And but you would think it doesn't matter because it just sits in its ground state and you need some enormous energy to excite it. But so that's what I say here, that if the separation is very large, the tachyon is massive, so you would think that you can ignore it. But in fact, as we'll see in a moment, it's not really true that you can ignore it. Or to say it in a different way, the fact that this tachyon that connects the two arms of this configuration is very massive simply means that it does not want to turn on with a small coefficient. So the sort of low for small tachyon fields, we have a supersymmetric dynamics. But in fact, it's important to take into account large fluctuations of this tachyon when analyzing these kinds of systems. And we will see in a moment that that leads to big effects. And this is clear already at sort of the simplest level of analysis of these systems, by which I mean the limit in which you just pretend that these NS brains are just places in which the D brains can end. In other words, you don't worry about any back reaction effects. So in this limit, you would say that it can't really be true that this tachyon is not important. And the reason is that that configuration that I drew before actually can, in principle, decay to another one. So the ends of these D brains and the NS brains can come together. They can reconnect and then snap up here. So the issue becomes, is their length in this configuration smaller or larger than it is in the one where they did this reconnection. And if this configuration has lower energy, then this is the true ground state in this limit. And the other one is some excited state. Now, of course, even if this is true, even if this guy has lower energy than that one, then that one is still a metastable state in the sense that you have to increase the energy of the brains in order to do this reconnection. So there's a potential barrier that separates the two. So in this geometric limit, you would say that the situation here is the following, that if this configuration has a lower energy than the other one, then this is the true vacuum. And of course, in this vacuum, the gauge symmetry of the original brain configuration, which was UN1 cross UN2, is broken because of this reconnection to some subgroup. So you can think of this as some sort of broken vacuum of this gauge theory. And if the other one has lower energy, then it is the ground state, and the gauge symmetry is not broken in the ground state. Now, which of the two is the ground state requires some elementary calculation. You just compare the length, and you find that the broken brain configuration has a higher energy than the unbroken one, obviously, when the distance is large enough. That's sort of trivial, right? If you separate these two more and more, then it costs you energy to have them connected in this way, and it's much more efficient for it to go down and then back up. So what you find in this sort of elementary approximation is a picture like this, that if the separation of the two arms is very small or smaller than this critical value, then it's energetically favorable to be in this configuration, and the gauge symmetry is broken. Then at this value of the separation, the system undergoes a first-order phase transition. It sort of jumps to this unbroken configuration. And for all larger values of the separation, the gauge symmetry is unbroken. This is what you find in this elementary approximation, in the approximation where everything takes place in flat space. And so so let me perhaps just put this picture here to orient it myself for later purposes. And so this is the sort of large delta x unbroken phase. So that's the ground state for large separations. And this is the small delta x broken phase. And moreover, what this flat space approximation seems to tell you is that even in the regime in which one of these configurations is an excited state, namely it has higher energy than the other one, it's still metastable. So for example, this one is locally stable even for delta x's much smaller than this, maybe all the way to the string scale. This is what you would think. And this one is locally stable no matter how large the separation between these NS prime brains is. This is the kind of thing that you would deduce from sort of elementary considerations. And we will find that actually it's more or less okay, but there are corrections to this on both sides. Namely, this configuration stops being locally stable at the separation that is much, much larger in general than the string scale, and this one stops being metastable at some finite separation of these two brains. And we will also see that this is directly related to phenomena that you can see in field theory. One more thing that I want to mention is that another interesting thing that will turn out is something that to me is very surprising, which is both of these configurations break supersymmetry. Of course, the one, this, for this one I explained it before, and this one has this property as well. But in fact, we will argue later that while this is true classically, the ground state of the system is in fact supersymmetric. So in fact, what happens here is that the classical ground state are not the actual ground states of the system, but actually are just some long-lived metastable states. And so this point is what I basically just mentioned before. So the question is, what do we need to do in order to go beyond this sort of classical geometric approximation? And the answer is very simple. You can easily see it from this picture. Even if we're doing classical string theory, there is an important effect that we're neglecting when drawing pictures like this. And the effect is the sort of gravitational attraction between the D brains and the NS brains in this picture. The NS brains, of course, create some classical background around them, and the D brains live in this background and are attracted to them. And so even in the gravity approximation, you need to include this effect. And the way you include this effect is just by studying the Dirac-Born-Infeld action for these D4 brains in the background of the NS brains. So that's something that is pretty standard, so I will just not describe the details here, just to remind you how this, what it is that you need to do. So the background of these NS brains, of these guys here, is just the famous Cullen-Harvey and Strominger geometry. So the important thing is that there is a harmonic function here which modifies the geometry from flat space at some distance scale that I will call L, which is proportional to the string scale and has a factor of square root of this K, the number of these NS brains. And so this is the geometry in which these D brains find themselves. And what you have to do is plug in that geometry into the DBI action for the brains and solve for the shape of the D brains. In other words, you want to look at D brains that start at this point and end at this point. And in the middle, they do whatever that's determined by the equations of motion of this DBI action.
So your DS prime brains are just single?
So these guys, there's one of. And actually, what I'm doing also holds when this K is 1, so that there is only one of these. I don't really need the number of these brains to be very large for all these calculations to be valid.
But you're not going to include the back reaction of the DS prime.
The NS prime. You can see is not that important because all the fun is taking place over here. So the important thing is when the D brains want to be stretched like this, is their attraction to these guys. This is somehow a mild effect. So let's see. So there are some equations to solve. I'm not going to describe their solution. It's basically this kind of action. You're looking for the form of this curve here. And this solution obviously will take some form like this, right? So they're attracted, they're fixed at the two ends, so they will sort of curve down. And essentially, the thing that you have to determine, the most important factor here, is how low will they go. So they go down to some.
For small k, then you would only trust this approximation when this minimal distance
is large. Exactly, right. So actually, it turns out that, you'll see towards the end that if I want to compare this to gauge theory in a regime where supergravity is valid, I will, in any case, be interested in such a regime in which gravity is valid. But if you allow yourself to introduce this k, then you can even trust it, you know, much more than that. I mean, there's much more to be said about the region of validity of this analysis as a function of k, but I don't have time to say it, so let me perhaps not worry about this question of the validity of the DBI approximation. Yeah, so there are these equations that you have to solve. The solution will look like this. And of course, what we're interested in, as I mentioned in the beginning, is studying the quantitative features of this solution as a function of all these parameters. What happens when we separate the points more, bring the whole thing up and down, change this k. And you will not be shocked to learn that if you just solve these equations for y1 equals to y2 equals to some y, in other words, a situation where these two brains are at the same height, you get most of the mileage here. And then doing the general case is a small correction to that. So I will here, just for lack of time, describe what happens in this case. And even that I will not do in any kind of detail. So there are some kind of equations that you need to solve after you plug into the DBI action are you get relations between the separation of these two NS prime brains, the height at which they are, and the minimal height that this deep brain reaches. And interestingly, it turns out that when you include this five-brain geometry, there are actually two distinct regimes in which the solution of these equations is qualitatively different. And the two regimes are where this height is sufficiently small. It turns out that it has to be smaller than this L, which, to remind you, goes like square root of k times the string scale. And the solution has a different qualitative structure when the height is larger than this L. So I will describe this differently. So basically, separately. So basically what you want to do is look at each of these cases and ask what happens as you bring these brains closer together or farther apart, etc. What you find is something like this. So first of all, I'm discussing here the case of small height for these NS prime brains. So here you find something interesting, that this smooth curved solution that I've been discussing only exists when the separation is sufficiently small. And whenever it exists, its energy is smaller than that of these brains that just go down and back up. So in other words, the energetics, as you vary the shape of these deep brains, is something like this. This original configuration with which we started, this one, actually, instead of being a local minimum of the effective action, becomes a local maximum. So if you start bringing the two points together, the energy actually goes down. The energy keeps going down until you reach this smooth solution, and then if you continue sort of deforming the deep brain shape further up, it starts going up again. So in this case, this expectation that this solution should always be a local minimum of the effective action is not true. This is for separations that are sufficiently small here. And so that's already something that is different from the sort of naive geometric picture that we started with. And actually, one can think about this in a way that is much more palatable to us, which is that this fact that this solution with the straight brains is a local maximum of the effective action rather than being a local minimum has to do with the presence of a certain localized tachyon in this region. So what you find there is that the fundamental string stretched between the two arms of this structure is actually tachyonic whenever delta x is smaller than pi l, which seems at first sight surprising because this L could be very, very large in string units. So naively, you would think that a fundamental string that stretches between these two is going to be very heavy. But in fact, what happens there is that all of this takes place in a non-trivial curved background, the near-horizon geometry of the five brains. And there, the energetics is different. And in particular, you have this large sort of negative shift to the energy of the tachyon. And while it's indeed massive, sort of outside of the five-brain throat, it's actually tachyonic in here. So,
I use the strict supergravity approximation for this NS brain, but I find the tachyon persisted arbitrarily large. I mean, is it some failure of the
arbitrarily large what?
You said that this tachyon only arises at small enough.
No. So this tachyon arises at arbitrarily large L as long as this delta x is sufficiently small. So you could do a strict supergravity approximation if... So remember, the way this formula work here is that L is the number of NS brains times L string. So if this k is larger, much, much larger than 1, then the supergravity approximation is okay. But what is the supergravity approximation? What do you need to do? What you need to do is look at, this is the supergravity approximation, right? You have this harmonic function. What I was saying in this language is that if you look at R's that are much, much smaller than L, which of course does not preclude you from using supergravity if this k is very large, then in this regime, this is just the original sort of linear dilaton background of these people. And in this regime, you can analyze the tachyon. And it's actually not completely, there are some subtleties in this analysis, but what you find is this formula that...
My question is, given that H diverges at R equals 0, why is it that the tachyon shuts off at some finite delta x? Why don't I see a really large delta x?
No, I think my question, I have a question, which is, the metric for the Neuberschwarz 5 brain doesn't change distances along the brain.
Right.
In the string metric.
Right.
But you're talking about a tachyon stretched along the Neuberschwarz 5
brain. Right, right.
So why is its length changing at all?
Why is its mass different than... No, well, so it's an additive change. Well...
Right, I mean, the whole harmonic function is affecting the transverse space and giving you an infinite throw.
You can think about it in the following way. If you have a tachyon... The statement you just made is related to the fact that this factor is exactly the same as in flat space.
Okay.
This is basically what you just said.
Right.
That here there's a 1 and not...
Right.
That's basically what you just said. Now, the question is, what about this, right?
Uh-huh.
And in order to... So there is, as I said, a subtlety here. So well, first of all, what is the technical problem that you have to address? You take a fundamental string stretched across the structure. Okay, let's look. So you have a fundamental string stretched from here to here. And so what would you say without me telling you anything else? You would say, well, the mass squared has to have a contribution like this because of the fact that that direction is just like flat space. And then you would say, I have to solve a Schrodinger problem for a wave function which depends on just the radial direction. And you're looking for normalizable states which are just functions of the radial directions, and you're requiring that they're normalizable. Now, what's the subtlety? The subtlety is that there is a singularity at the five brains, right? So you have to say what you're going to do there. And it's understood what to do with that. I don't want to enter this, but... when all the dust settles, what you find is that the normalizable mode has this mass. And it's actually, by the way, related to something that I don't know how many people here are familiar with, the so-called hairpin brain of... have you ever heard of the hairpin brain?
I've heard of it.
Okay. So this hairpin brain is something that lives in the Leonard Dilleton background, and it looks more or less like this guy in the limit where the two purple points go up to infinity. And it looks like this. And it has... both this curved interesting shape, and at the same time it has precisely this tachyon turned on, the tachyon that connects the two arms of the hairpin. And in that case, the asymptotic separation is precisely equal in my notation to pi times L, so that that tachyon is massless, and that tachyon is precisely the normalizable, in this case, zero mode of this problem. But the only reason I even mentioned this is that a good way of thinking about what's happening here is the following, is that this system has, you can think of that tachyon as an order parameter, much like you do in magnets. And what I just explained to you a moment ago is that when delta x is smaller than pi l, because of this fact here, this tachyon wants to condense. And that's related to the fact that this configuration wants to go to this one. So in this region, you can plot the expectation value of the tachyon versus delta x, and you will get something like this. So far I just mentioned what happens for delta x smaller than pi l. But of course, you can analyze this problem exactly, and the tachyon goes to zero mass when delta x goes to pi l. And this solution, this sort of U-shaped solution, as you increase the separation, smoothly approaches the five brains and then smoothly connects to this straight one. In other words, the smooth curved solution just does not exist for delta x larger than pi l, and as you approach pi l from below, it smoothly connects to this one. Yeah. So indeed, so what that means is that the expectation value of this tachyon is sort of finite as you increase the separation. And this separation is like some sort of mass parameter, as L mentioned when I talk about the gauge theory. It becomes smaller and smaller. It goes to zero at pi L, and then it remains at zero. And of course, the whole point of this plot is that what we have in this case is a second-order phase transition. This is a phase transition in which we have restoration of gauge symmetry, right? So in this broken phase, when the ground state of the system is a solution in which the deep brains go like this, as I mentioned before, has some part of the gauge symmetry broken. And we approach this point, the gauge symmetry is restored, and then as we keep going, it... We're in the unbroken phase. Well, actually, this potential that I was drawing, this one you meant, this potential is, of course, very impressionistic, which is why I did not label the x axis, because, we're discussing a potential for curves, right? So I'm not changing one parameter. You can ask, what is the one parameter you're changing here? I'm discussing an infinite number of possible deformations of these curves, and the only content of this this picture is that there's only one local minimum as you vary the curve, and this one is a sort of saddle point. It has directions in which you can reduce the energy. So.
But still, it makes sense to ask what happens if alpha prime goes to zero.
So alpha prime goes to zero. So, the question is, how are you planning to take this limit, right? So, one way to take this limit is just to increase this k when this problem becomes more and more dominated by supergravity, and then what happens is what I just said. I mean, in order to answer this question, you have to tell me more precisely what limit you want to take, because alpha prime goes to zero is in the eye of the beholder.
I'm a little confused as to why this is a second order, not first order distribution. For the following reason: imagine I fix L or K, and then I start with a very small x, L x. So the configuration with minimum energy is the one which is connected.
Yeah.
And then I start slowly increasing. So what you're saying is, this curve will eventually just touch the NS5 brains. But then once he does that...
Oh, no, actually, I think I know what... Well, you didn't misunderstand. I didn't say... so if you solve these equations, which I think you can do much better than me, what you will find is that the solution looks like this. So this is sort of phi equals to minus infinity, you know, the location of... So... It for certain delta x, it looks like this. Then you increase delta x, it looks like this. What it approaches is not a configuration like this, after which they reconnect. What it approaches, it looks more and more like this. And when delta x hits pi l, it just looks like that. Okay, this is what the solution actually... I mean, you know, I obviously didn't put any the details of the calculations here, but... It does not approach something that is continuously connected to the straight thing. It just approaches the straight thing. So that's why it's a second-order phase transition. Actually, since I will not have time to discuss all the details in the other case, it's actually useful to describe what I just finished explaining to you using this plot so that I can just put the analog of this plot for the other case. Because remember that everything I said so far is true in the regime where the y of these NS prime brains is sufficiently small, namely smaller than this number here. So what I just finished explaining to you, and you should ignore this green line down here for now, is that the energetics of the system is the following. If you look at what the ground state looks like as a function of the separation, so first, this is just these guys. So their energy grows as you increase delta x, and then when you hit pi l, they continuously connect to this other branch where you have the branch just going straight down. So this is that same second-order phase transition plotted on a curve like this. And again, I'm not thinking about this green line for now. And this happens at pi L. So what happens in the other case? So of course, I should emphasize that this is very, very different from the picture we got from this geometric flat space picture that I described in the beginning, where there was a first order transition which was very strong between these two configurations in flat space. And it's not surprising that it's different. It's clear where the effect is coming from. The NS prime brains are sort of deep in the, or maybe not deep, but they are in some non-trivial place in the geometry of these NS brains. So everything is not taking place in flat space. And what you get when you do the calculation is the second order phase transition in this region. But there has to be a picture that is approximately like what we got from just geometry in flat space if these guys are high up. And not only that, this is also the region that, as you mentioned, we can trust the gravity approximation even for small k. So we have to do the analysis again for large separations of all the brains, which perhaps is, in any case, the most natural place in which to think about this system, where all the distances here are large, and you want to understand what the brains are doing. So there what happens is actually something interesting. And again, let's ignore this green curve and just understand what the other ones are doing. So in this case, this part of the story is exactly the same as before. We start at very small separation of these brains. And so the ground state clearly corresponds to these deep brains just going across here. And as you increase the separation, their energy grows. Then at pi L, again, this new solution appears. It becomes a local minimum of the effective action, the new solution being just this one. Right, so remember what I told you before is that in general in this configuration there is a localized tachyon whose mass squared is negative in the near horizon geometry of the five brains if the separation is small enough, and its mass is positive if it is larger than this number. So this is the local minimum that this corresponds to, which appears at delta x equals to pi L. Now, of course, once it appears, it's a local minimum. You know, there's no instability anymore, but it doesn't have to be a global minimum, and indeed it isn't. Its energy is still much larger in general than that of this sort of U-shape, the analog of this guy in this regime. But then as you keep going, they cross, and at some point, this solution actually becomes the lowest state, lowest energy state, or the ground state of the system, which is the case in this regime. Another interesting thing here is that the other guy, which is this sort of U-shape, continues to be a local minimum, but unlike this flat space picture, this does not persist all the way to infinite separation. Right? When I started this talk, I said that if in the flat space approximation, no matter how large the separation is, this is a local minimum, the effective action. You can't go from it to this without first increasing the energy. But this actually is not true when you include the geometry of the five brains if the separation is too large. And you can compute all these numbers. It actually stops being even a local minimum of the effective action and just disappears. So there are some calculations that are behind this, which I'm not describing, but the basic picture you get is this one. And of course, here there is now a first-order phase transition, which happens at this point, right? So the ground state is this one all the way up to here, and then it jumps to this branch, and when it does that, it does so discontinuously. So the same sort of tachyon that we were discussing earlier behaves in this case like that. And so this is, of course, a first-order phase transition, much like the one that we discussed early on in the talk. And the once you pass this phase transition, this sort of this kind of shape remains a locally stable state or metastable state for a while longer. Now, so this is basically the end of the classical analysis of the system, and so I guess we see that this is an example of what I mentioned in the beginning of the talk, that once you break supersymmetry, you get much more, much richer in general phase structures, which we presumably should analyze in as many string backgrounds as we can with phase transitions, which are sometimes second order, sometimes first order, with all sorts of metastable states that exist in various regimes. This is what happens in the system classically. Now, the...
I'm sorry, you yeah. said that the system, the two-action doesn't break supersymmetry. Have you explained that yet?
No. Oh. So far, the picture that we got so far is one in which we have a generalization of this state and a generalization of this state. None of them preserve supersymmetry, and they sort of compete for who's better, right? Who has lower energy. And depending on the parameters, we have phase transitions of different kinds, but all of this is classical, and So what we see is a phase with broken supersymmetry, with broken gauge symmetry, with unbroken gauge symmetry, which depending on the parameters is the ground state or an excited state, and no supersymmetry ever. So this is where we get to sort of the last surprise here, which has to do with quantum effect. So if this was the end of it, and to be honest with you, if I did not know gauge theory, I would think that this is the end of it, right? There's nothing that looks unstable in either of those configurations when it is the lowest energy, you know, the one with the lower energy. There are no light modes, and it's not clear where it could go. But in fact, we know that this cannot be the full story. And here is why we know that it cannot be the full story. The reason it has to do with the fact that in a certain region, we can analyze the full quantum system just using gauge theory. And in gauge theory, we know more than we know in string theory. So here is how we can do this in gauge theory. So take all these pictures that I've been drawing here, even the original one, and ask what happens when the two NS prime brains align. What happens when X1 is equal to X2 or is close to it? In other words, let's look at the region of small delta X. Well, obviously, in the region of small delta X, a useful way of thinking about this system is as a small deformation of the system with delta X equal to 0. And if you really send delta X to 0, this system actually becomes supersymmetric. Here I just for concreteness took N2 larger than N1, and so obviously what happens when you push them on top of each other is that these N1 guys annihilate with N1 out of the N2 here, and you get some configuration like this. Where is it? So you get something like this. Okay, so at delta X equal to 0, this is still, I haven't taken any limits here. This brain, at delta X equal to 0, what we have is this brain configuration, and it's supersymmetric. Now, what is this brain configuration? Well, at low energies. After all, we are only looking at the low, vacuum structure and low energy excitations about it, so we can just ask what is the gauge theory that this corresponds to, and the answer is, it's a UN2 minus N1 times UN2 gauge theory, and there's some matter. So what is the matter? Well, we have bifundamentals here. We have an adjoint superfield of UN2. And we have a superpotential, you can easily convince yourself, which connects the adjoint of UN2 with the bifundamentals. That's something that's very straightforward to see. So phi 2 is this adjoint, the bifundamentals, little q and q tilde are these guys. There is a cubic superpotential. Now here I also, just not to write this equation again, wrote another term, but this term is absent. This term is proportional to delta x, so it's absent in this picture that just drew. Okay. So this is actually a very famous gauge theory. This is the Zyberg dual of something very simple. But let's not even worry about Zyberg duality. Let's just analyze what happens to this gauge theory when we turn on a small deformation, a small delta x, which in the gauge theory language corresponds to, again, you can easily convince yourself, to a linear superpotential, with this being the map. So in gauge theory, this is a very straightforward exercise. So what you will find, as I mentioned in the beginning of the talk, is that there is no solution to the F-term equation. This breaks, classically it breaks supersymmetry, which is not very surprising because this is just another way of saying that there is no picture with brains that you can draw that preserves supersymmetry. But in gauge theory, we know that this is kidding you. There is a non-perturbative superpotential for this phi 2, if which you can easily determine, right? If you turn on an expectation value for phi 2, then the quarks become massive. You can integrate them out, and just from the usual superpotential of pure Young-Mills, get some superpotential that goes like determinant of phi 2 to some power. And that is a non-perturbative effect in the gauge theory. So this is the part of the gauge theory analysis that we have definitely not included in anything I said here. Now, as for everything else here, I'm not going through the details of this, but the details are elementary. If you plug in the numbers, you will find that this whole discussion with a non-perturbative superpotential, which of course leads to a restoration of supersymmetry, is only valid when delta x is very, very small. So in gauge theory, of course, it's just valid period, but, well, until you hit the Landau pole of this gauge theory, which we're not discussing here. But in string theory, there is the further constraint that this analysis should not take you out of the regime in which gauge theory is replaced by string theory. So you have to plug in some numbers into there, and you actually find a very, very stringent constraint on this delta x for everything I said to be valid. You find that this delta x has to be smaller than something that goes like e to the minus 1 over g string times some powers of g string. Okay, but that's okay. I mean, it's not, you know, delta x is a free parameter. We can make it 0, we can make it small. And the main point I'm trying to make is that if you analyze the system for very, very small delta x, you know the answer to the question, what happens in this theory in when you include non-perturbative quantum effects?
And what supersymmetric
vacuum and M theory? Yeah. So there is a this problem has a said theory, said history that I'm that's directly related to your question that I would rather discuss separate because I want to finish in a couple of minutes. But the short answer to your question is yes, and it's trivial, as I'll mention in a moment. In fact, so first of all, what you mean by M theory is in this system with G string going to infinity, if I understand correctly. Okay, so you can see it there, but this is the only thing that you can see there. After all, you know, I think it's better so that I don't repeat myself that we have the discussion after the next few minutes. What are the facts? So the facts are that classically, let's say in the regime where, as you were mentioning before, all the distances here are large, this phase transition that you see classically is strongly first order. We saw this part of the story classically, and now the gauge theory analysis is telling us that we've missed something. That at least at very, very small delta x, there is another line of vacua which has lower energy than this one. Remember, this one is this U shape. And this is, in fact, the true ground state. So this is what the gauge theory that is valid in this little region around here is telling us is going on there. Now you can ask, this green line here you drew all over the place. You only know that it exists in some microscopic region around here. I do not know, we do not know how to prove that this persists for all delta x, but I think it's very, very reasonable that it does. First of all, for two reasons. One is that supersymmetric ground states don't just stop, typically, as you vary continuous parameters. And this is related to your question. Another parameter that is not in this plot at all that you could vary is g-string. And as you vary g-string, and in particular take it to infinity, you would also expect to always see, at the very least, the supersymmetric vacuum. So the short answer to your question, what else is there, is all these things. And they could easily disappear, as they do when you change all sorts of parameters here. So it could be, for example, that when g-string goes to infinity, the only thing that remains is the analog of this green line, the supersymmetric ground state, and you do not see any kind of metastable state.
Can I make a small objection about that statement of supersymmetry always preserving it?
Okay.
Usually you need a Witten index for that. I mean, the Witten index is zero because there's some massless particle. Disappear sometimes. So supersymmetric states can become non-supersymmetric because some finite operators turn on. So this happens.
Well, yeah, no, that's right. I'm not saying that I cannot write.
What I'm asking is there a mass gap? If there's a mass gap, then yes, you can always continue. But if there's no mass gap, one has to be a little bit more. I'm being very conservative with this second.
I think this theory, in the sense you're talking about, has a non-zero Witten index, as I'll mention in a moment. This actually is related to the second reason why I think that these supersymmetric vacua exist. And this is it has to do actually with what all of this, where all of this came from in the first place. See, when I started the seminar, I drew this picture with basically these guys up here. And in fact, if you look at the actual literature from 10 years ago, that configuration is supposed to be related to this one by some sort of stringy analog of Zeiberg duality. And this thing was never understood either in field theory or in string theory, but if you believe that this system has the same low energy dynamics as the one I started the seminar with, this one obviously has supersymmetric ground states. In fact, this is in the gauge theory. This is simply the electric gauge theory whose magnetic dual I analyzed two slides ago. So if you believe that the vacuum structure of this one is the same as of that one, then...
again, there's the ex proviso of D terms, because the D terms are not captured by...
Well, I think we probably should discuss it separately, if only because of the fact that I probably should stop in a moment. So, but at the same time, I, as I said, I do not claim to have a proof of the fact that we found the supersymmetric ground state of that system for all values of the separation. I would say there are plausible arguments for why. Yeah, I'll be with you in a second, Steve. There are plausible arguments that it exists. It's very clear why it's not trivial to see. This is, after all, a non-perturbative effect in weakly coupled type 2A string theory. And it's not even a non-perturbative effect that only involves geometrical directions. It involves also some non-geometrical directions. If you just look at what the gauge theory non-perturbative superpotential is, and so this is one of the open problems that need to be worried about here. Yeah.
Well, I was actually going to ask to what extent you have some kind of picture or guess for a picture about what the configuration is.
Yeah, so not only don't we have a guess, there isn't, there cannot be a picture like that, because if you take the gauge theory analysis, which is valid for small delta x, and in the gauge theory analysis there are all these fields, phi 2 and the bifundamentals, and there is a non-perturbative superpotential, you just look, solve the equations and see what fields have expectation values. There are fields that are non-geometrical in this picture that have expectation values, and so you're not going to see this as just some shape that satisfies the DBI equation. It just can't be, because there are some, without those extra fields, you're not going to be satisfying the equations of motion.
I don't want to sidetrack you too much, The old Hanani-Witten story, I remember that in that case, some of the quantum effects were, could be associated to the bending of the NS5 brain. Could that be related to what you have going on?
Well, it could on some level. I don't know how. It could be the beginning of some story. But it's important to emphasize that those effects that you're talking about are perturbative. So what you're talking about is the fact that when you have D brains ending on an S brain, it curves at order G string, whereas what we need here is a non-perturbative superpotential for these fields. But it could be that it's
that analysis produces the conical, it produces the
one loop.
Right, exactly, it produces exactly what you would expect for
the running.
The ADS.
I see. Well, yeah. I mean, it could be that. I certainly don't want to make statements like that it's not related or you cannot do it this way. It has not been analyzed so far. So this is actually one of the interesting open problems here. So I wanted to just finish with a couple of comments. So as I just said, it's likely, if you believe in these arguments, that all the classical states that I've shown you here are probably metastable with a lifetime that goes to infinity in the G-string goes to zero limit, like some power of e to the minus 1 over G-string. And another thing that I didn't actually even have time to say as I was going through it is that actually this picture that I suggested towards the end, one of the things that it implies is that you see here in classical string theory essentially the same picture that Intrilligate or Zeiberg and Shi found in the gauge theory that I just finished discussing. So Intrilligate or Zeiberg and Shi in our language basically were talking about in gauge theory, which of course is a different regime in parameter space, well, this small delta x regime, about these two lines. They were talking about the fact that there is a supersymmetric ground state and there is the metastable state, which you see classically. Now, in this problem, if you take all the distances to be very large and you focus on this region, actually then this x naught becomes very, very large if all the distances are much larger than the string scale. And then, as I said, all you see in classical string theory is these two guys, but it's basically the same picture because you see a metastable state which stops. So this delta x is essentially the mass. You see a metastable state. You see a state which is stable in classical string theory, but that state is not exactly the ground state, but it becomes closer and closer to it as delta x grows, because the way I'm thinking about it is that the only difference between them, so the actually supersymmetric state is this one, and the one you see classically, which is the ground state in that regime, is the one with this guy on top. But if delta x is very large, there's really no difference in their low energy dynamics. So so this is another answer to your question about, you know, that they do or do not break supersymmetry. When the separation of these two is very large, then the original configuration we started with is also approximately supersymmetric. And not only is it approximately supersymmetric, it's essentially the same as this one, which is exactly supersymmetric in terms of its low energy dynamics. And so this is what I was trying to capture in this part of the plot. So, by the way, one thing that you easily see using classical string theory, which is actually very hard to see in gauge theory, is that this metastable branch ends at some value of the mass. So in the gauge theory analysis, it's known that it has to end at some point. If you take the magnetic gauge theory of Zeiberg and turn on a larger and larger mass, at some point it has to end. But it's very difficult to analyze the system here because you cannot use either weakly coupled magnetic or weakly coupled electric variables. Whereas in the string theory regime, it's easy. It just reduces to a classical calculation of the sort I at least alluded to in this talk. So so this is basically the content of this comment here. And of course, there's a lot that I didn't describe here, but also a lot that was not done yet. So for example, the main thing is what we discussed, that it would be great to just calculate the non-perturbative effects. I mean, you know, whether or not the ground state is supersymmetric, it's clear there is a non-perturbative effect, which is very important, small delta x, and you know, you just need to compute it one way or another. And this hints that there are important non-perturbative effects that are totally not captured by these pictures, and so we just need to develop techniques for calculating them. And this is, I think, an important lesson for non-supersymmetric backgrounds in general. And of course, there are all sorts of generalizations of this that we haven't looked at, but I probably should stop here and apologize for running over.
Any more questions or objections?
Can we hear a brief answer to Sergei's question about an in theory description?
Okay, so my view on this, so now is actually a good time to answer this question. The answer is that if you take one of these configurations I started with and increase G string and make it larger and larger, it's sort of obvious what the system wants to do. It simply wants to go to the M theory curve that people found for this configuration, which is exactly supersymmetric and has this parameter in it. I should stress, I mean, just in terms of the literature, the point of view, I didn't make it explicit, but the point of view here is more or less orthogonal to that of the other people that try to analyze the system, who, for example, did claim that there is no M theory curve that describes all sorts of things. And the difference in the approaches has to do with something, with a physical question. There's an important issue here, whether you should take the asymptotic form of these NS brains of various kinds as given and something that you cannot change in the process of analyzing the dynamics, which was the point of view taken by some paper that had Nati and some other people on it, Simeon Hellerman, etc. In my opinion, this is simply incorrect. A good analogy for this is something that some people in this room worked on. You see, one way of thinking about the system is you have these infinite NS prime and NS brains, and then there is some intersection which some dynamics takes place, which is localized. And that dynamics sometimes includes instabilities. The situation is very, very similar to these non-supersymmetric orbifolds that have localized tachyons on them. Assuming that the asymptotic boundary conditions on these NS prime brains are fixed and cannot change by the dynamics at the intersection is essentially the same thing as assuming in this other problem that the asymptotic opening of some cone is fixed and cannot change when a localized tachyon at the tip of the cone wants to condense. And we know that that's not what's going on in these systems. What's going on is if you have a localized dynamic somewhere coupled to some bulk modes, which in the APS case is the asymptotic geometry, and in this case is the asymptotic form of the NS brain, what typically will happen is that the localized dynamics will do its thing. If they're tachyons, they will condense or whatever. And then the large brains or the asymptotic geometry there will adjust. In your case, as you described in your paper, there's going to be a pulse of sort of dilaton and metric that will propagate outwards. And in this case, the same thing will happen with the shape of the NS brains.
Yeah, isn't the brain bending logarithmic at long distance?
Yes.
So all of these things, so none of these things really mean, I mean, X and Y, they're blowing up, like, I mean, how do you have to find some scale or something at which you measure them?
The way I'm thinking about it is you start with this classical system,
okay,
with GS, and with GS equal to zero, then you turn on GS, and it will... But that's not the issue. The real issue is not how you define it. The physical disagreement between different groups of people that you may hear talking about it is whether that logarithmic shape is allowed to change or not. And this is what I just addressed. And I think there, I just do not agree with their point of view.
Is there a supersymmetric in-theory curve that describes the other configuration with the NS prime on top of the brain?
Well, that's exactly my point, that there does not have to be such a thing. Because as you change G-string, the asymptotic boundary conditions can change, and they can go from this to that. And in fact, in some cases here I showed you explicitly that there are configurations which just have tachyons.
In the situation where the affine boundary condition changes, is the supersymmetric ground state really a normalizable state in the original Hilbert space, or is it something that's sort of a runaway or an asymptotic configuration for the system?
Well, is flat space a state in the theory of a C mod Zn?
I I would say no, but...
Okay, but that's all very interesting. But if you start with type 2 string theory on R7,1 times C mod Zn, then and you displace the tachyon infinitesimally from the min, from, you know, zero, dynamically the system will do various things. You can give it all sorts of names, but it will not stay there, right? And this is basically what is going on here. So basically the answer to your question is that there is an empty recurve just for the vacuum, and all of the fun. So we're not interested in the vacuum, right? In, if ISS again found the supersymmetric vacuum of magnetic supersymmetric QCD, it wouldn't be so interesting. The interesting thing there was the metastable state, and the metastable states here are, as you see, are not robust. They move around as you change the parameters. And I fully expect them to disappear by the time you get to infinite G-string. So that's sort of the long answer to your question.
Just to compare again with the gauge theory result, where in the gauge theory you can find this non-trivial superpotential and find exactly these vacuum states. In that case, is there a normalizable ground state in the original theory, or is it again some kind of asymptotic state that sort of lies off at infinity?
Sorry,
you said in the case where delta x is small,
yes.
Do the analysis in the gauge theory.
Yes.
You find the exact non-perturbative superpotential.
Yes. So that, there you say there are two states. There is the locally stable metastable state, and there is the actual ground state.
And I'm just curious, in that case, what's the qualitative nature of the ground state? Is it a normalizable state, and so the same Hilbert space, or is it something that lies off at the boundary of configuration space?
No. Well, they're just two local minima of some potential, right? These are the facts there. But, string theories, there are all sorts of issues that I didn't mention because I don't understand them very well. Yeah. Issues having to do with explicit versus spontaneous supersymmetry breaking in here as opposed to the field theory. String theory is different, right? This is not field theory here. So things could be different. But the important thing is that if the dynamics at the intersection is unstable, then that's it, right? Then the instability will resolve itself, and it will, the information will propagate outwards.
So I have, I guess, one more question. Could you go back to the picture with the green line? So you're saying for delta x very small, some non-perturbative effect corrects the energy, and actually you get a supersymmetric ground state, whose energy is very similar to the precisely because non-perturbative effects are small and weak coupling. But then, did you mean to go it in a way, if I go to...
Very large?
No, to X-star, over here. The difference in energies is of order 1.
Well, we don't know. I mean, as I said, we do not have any understanding of this green line beyond... Well, I would say that we know one thing, that it exists over here. And the other thing I would say that we know is that... if it exists over here, it's given by this electric configuration. So in the sense that I made precise before, it's very close at low energies to this one. But I don't really understand beyond that very well. Okay.
One last question.
Oh, sorry.
Because I got lost in dimension counting. If I go back to the picture of the classical brains, I think about this moduli space, like a little delta x with the parameters. In that case, the dimension of the moduli space is what? Is it 2?
When you say dimension of moduli space?
There are various places I can put the brains. And so for each brain...
You mean like in this picture here?
Right. I lost track of the number of transverse dimensions and so forth. So there is a...
You mean moving the brains around in the transverse?
Is that right?
Well, these guys can be moved in 4 and 5.
Yeah.
There are some other directions that are not playing a role here that I decided not to turn on, and you can ask what happens if you do turn them on. Things become more complicated, having to do indeed with all sorts of D terms, which I'm sure David will be happy to tell me about. But there are things that I decided not to turn on, from the beginning. So
I'm just wondering if these issues are related to the lack of normalizable ground states in low-dimensional theories. Is this something that I would have thought is being described by?
I had some long conversations with one of the authors of this other paper. And indeed, so you can ask questions. I mean, a question that will resonate with you is, there's non-renormalizable and there's non-renormalizable, right? So there's a there's non-renormalizable as an ADS, where we really don't want these things to change, right? The things that correspond to adding something to the Lagrangian of the dual CFT.
So
this
non-normalizable.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Yes.
So there are non-normalizable modes. I think what you're asking is what kind of non-normalizable modes are we discussing here?
Exactly.
Like these modes that, for example, if the NS brains have to somehow back react to something that happened at the intersection, and this kind of pulse goes out from the intersection to infinity, how you ask, I think, how is this different, say, from non-normalizable modes in ADS space, which we just don't allow to change, period. And, that's why I think a much closer analogy to this system is not non-normalizable modes in ADS, but this APS kind of situation where you have localized instabilities and then flat space at infinity that has to back react, sort of readjust when something happens at the singularity. But, okay, thank you.
Thanks.
You're.